Hi, it's Sunday afternoon and time for another edition of Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis, today. With me, my co-host, Sebastian Matthews.
Hey, Jeff. How's it going?
So far, so good, it appears.
And today we have our guest poet, Joanna Cooper. Joanna, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
All right. It's been a while since we've been together on the show.
It has. The summer was, well...
People were all over the place.
That's right. It was sparse around here sometimes. Yeah. So, glad to have you back.
Joanna, it's good to have you.
Good to have Joanna. Yeah.
Joanna's been living in Nashville for about a year now. She was raised in Knoxville, Tennessee, and Salisbury, North Carolina, but around age 11 moved to Heidelberg, Germany, and then since then lived in places as diverse as Lawrence, Kansas, Philadelphia, Twin Cities, and now has moved back to North Carolina. She holds a PhD in American Literature from Temple University and is currently enrolled in the New England College's MFA program in poetry. 2004, her chapbook, The Crocodile Lady and Other Poems, won the Dicey Brown Poetry Chapbook Competition. Well, we were hoping you'd start by reading some poems, and if you want to say a few words or not, just maybe jump right in, and then we can talk. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sounds great. I'll read about three, and then we can talk. The first one I'm going to read is called My Mother as a Monkey, and I think a little bit of explanation is warranted here. This is a poem inspired by a time that my mother was in the hospital, and they had to give her painkillers. They gave her something called oxycodone, which I guess is the main ingredient in OxyContin, which was the drug of the stars. so she had quite a time on that, and actually I think they gave her too much of that. So this poem is inspired by that.
It's a real coincidence because my mother's a monkey as well.
It's common, I think, once you start to think about it. All right, so My Mother as a Monkey. When they gave her too much oxycodone, she braced against the hospital bed's edge, dreading her 20 steps, and shook her unwashed hair at the male nurse, saying, "I'm the Brett girl." Then she sighed, reciting a line nobody recognized, "I wish I was a monkey." "And anyway, doesn't she sniff your shoulder when she hugs you? And didn't your mother take you to the zoo to study primates? The baboon mothers, with pointy box faces, are shifting icons. 1 minute calm repose, the next agitation. I think of the mother mammal body, warmth and scent and heartbeat, and it isn't that she bares her teeth like that. It's just the tender patience of the female primate and the captive's fierce struggle, the fretting, the humor, the intelligent eyes."
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll just jump right into the next one here.
Yeah, read it. Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This one is called Several Nights Now. I wrote it, I don't know when I wrote it. I wrote it, I think, when I was living in the Twin Cities a couple years ago. And it sort of mutated as I wrote it. At the time, I was writing a lot of prose poems, and it started out as a prose poem. Yeah. It has these really long lines, but then I ended up shaping it, and it just ended up being kind of prose poem-ish, but with some line breaks in there. So you can't see that, but take my word for it. And I guess that's all I'll say about this one. Okay, Several Nights Now. Several nights now, you have been in one of a row of chairs on the shoreline, not even realizing that you're washing around in the tide until the TV gets pulled away, or the washing machine, or the toddler whose hand you were holding. A kind of lullaby. The feeling when you were small, say 7, when you lay in bed, not wanting to sleep, not wanting to be alone, but resigned then. Holding a plastic thrift store toy, a white bulbous bird with light color airbrushed on the cheeks and wings, the hard plastic in your hands, the round shape of it, the old string coming out, a ring at the end. This was the kind of thing that could keep you company when you were smaller, but now you are just here alone with this toy cupped near your ear, playing it over and over. Your mother, perhaps listening from the other room, wondering. You are pushing off in your own boat. The sea is darkness, glimmers of moon and darkest clouds. Alone in your sea canoe, the lullaby doesn't anchor you anymore. It sends you back to your own devices, cuts you free. The loneliness then, knowing that no one will fill this space for the rest of your life, Not really. And the aloneness is delicious, being adrift, clutching some other baby's Salvation Army toy. And the last one I'll read for right now is, looks a lot different on the page. It's shorter lines. And it was inspired actually by...
This is the one that was inspired by that painting?
Yeah, by a piece of visual art, which...
I'll hold it up for the audience.
Okay, yes, right here. I'm holding it up to the microphone.
Through
right
the magic of radio, you can now look there. At this painting okay. that we're talking about. But it's a watercolor painting, and it shows two figures laying, reclining on... just sort of a blank ground. There's really no landscape except for some suggestive kind of figurative stuff in the back, suggestive of clouds and
trees.
Some trees.
Yeah. But the figures are hooded or
they're wearing ski masks. They look sort of like the artist's name is Lindsay Smith, and I actually haven't met her. She's a friend of a friend, and she went to art school in Minneapolis, and they look sort of like Minneapolis, you know, artist hipster types, but with ski masks on. So this poem is inspired by
hers is red and his is blue,
right?
Yeah. Assuming that one can identify the genders.
Yeah.
The smaller figures is red and the larger figures is blue, wouldn't you say?
Right, it's very mysterious. We assume it's a heterosexual couple, maybe lovers, but then we start to ask ourselves all sorts of questions about these masked figures.
Who are these cats?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, this one's called How We Were Strangers. How we were strangers and lovers and bandits then. How the sky could have been pink and leaves made of orange wax if we had looked. How if someone had taken a picture, we would have been an album cover. How the clouds were the smoke of our non-thoughts. How we lay together at dusk. How the masks we wore felt warm and soft and held our breath near our faces, so we only shared some of it. How all that remains of the landscape is the imprint of trees. How the memory of tall grass holds us.
Nice music.
Nice and very different from in some ways from the others.
Kind of impressed and curious how when we write about paintings or music or anything else, you know, inspired by other art, how the way we enter the poems are always usually different from our other ways that we write. And it's like, what about responding to other art gives us such a freedom to be like, to make that move, that anaphoric move of the how. Were you aware of that right away? Or did you feel like that was something you finished the poem, you're like, oh, that's a different kind of poem. It looks different on the page.
Yeah, I was aware of it as I was writing it, and I liked that about it, definitely, that it's very different from other poems that I've written. And it was one of those that, it always sounds kind of pretentious when people talk about their, you know, their practice, like, oh, this poem came out whole, and this one, you know, but this one came out whole. I was just sort of making notes in my notebook, and I just started making this list of impressions that I got from the painting, and a lot of them just kind of came out as these lines.
Basically, yeah.
And so I liked that it was just, you know, the mystery of the image kind of allowed me to enter into this mystery of this other kind of language.
Yeah, you get into a different form of association or, you know, different sense of form somehow.
So it was a really good exercise for me.
Yeah, the lines are good. Shorter. There's one line that feels more like one of your lines, how the mask we wore felt warm and soft and held our breath near our faces, so we only shared some of it. That's got that longer. But yeah, it's a nice poem. It's too bad. I think a good journal would be a ekphrastic journal where you just got like a poem and an image and a poem and an image. This poem works on its own, but it's...
Yeah, I think it does add something though to see the image, which, you know, again, through the magic of radio.
Yes, that's right.
Everyone listening.
That's right. Have seen it.
We'll put it on the blog.
That's right. We can put it on the blog. Right. Well, nice.
Well, so, this is wordplay.
That's right. Yeah, it is. And wordplay is produced in the studios of WPVM LP. In downtown Asheville. It's at 103.5 on the dial and also streaming through WPVM.org. And WPVM, I should say, is a broadcast service of the Mountain Area Information Network.
Our guest today is Joanna Cooper, and we've been listening to her reader poems and talk a little bit about them. We're going to take a quick break and do our calendar. I pulled a couple things off the Mountain Express. Obviously, right now, if you're downtown, you're probably not listening to us yet. You are instead at the Laugh Festival having a good time, and we'll probably head on down there afterwards. A lot of good things going on there. But coming up, it looks like on the, I think it's the 13th. I'll double check that, but you should find out. The Henderson County Public Library System is hosting, among other things, Robert Morgan's will speak on 7 o'clock at the branch, main branch at 301 North Washington. For information, call 697-4725.
And what day is that?
I think that's the 13th.
The 13th, yeah. Thursday then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got all my stuff's kind of out of reach.
But, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And I do know up on the 14th, I think next Friday at 7 o'clock at Malaprop's, Elise Blackwell will be reading from her new novel, Grub, which chronicles the triumphs and humiliations of a group of young novelists living in New York. Hmm. Sounds good.
Hmm. Good.
We have another.
You know, Grail Marcus is going to be reading at Malaprop's. He's going to be at Malaprop's here in Asheville on Haywood Street on the 15th.
Yeah, Lipstick Traces. And
yeah, and wonderful, wonderful writing on Dylan, Elvis.
Sex Pistols.
The Sex Pistols. Some of the best music criticism or music, you know, insightful music writing, I think, of the last couple decades. So.
Oh, he's one of the best.
Yeah.
Hey, we really have a special guest in the studio.
Let's put him on.
My
put him on mic for
boy Avery's here, and he wants to say hello.
Hello.
Thank you, Avery.
Avery Erly.
All right. Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you so much. Also coming up is an evening with master storyteller, narrator, and singer Charlotte Blake Alston, who shares her rich repertoire of stories, songs, raps, monologues, poetry, and dramatic impersonations from the African and African-American oral and cultural traditions. A former teacher, Charlotte uses her craft as a means of communication and education, of fostering an appreciation and understanding of differences among people, and of providing active, joyful entertainment in the best sense of the word to audiences of all ages. That's coming up on September the 12th, 2007, of course, at the Diana Wortham Theater at Pack Place. It'll be at 7 o'clock. Admission is $12. For more information, call 257-4530 or go online to dwtheater.com.
All right, we're back with Joanna Cooper. She's going to read us some more poems in a second, but I know that you're in the New England College MFA right now.
Right.
And I heard Jeff asking you before the show about your teachers. You mentioned a teacher earlier, a Native American teacher. Could you talk a little bit about like who you've been working with or who influences you?
Well, the Native American teacher was a teacher named Lucy Tapahanzo. In the first master's program that I did, which was just a straight literature program before I did the PhD, I took a couple of creative writing workshops, one of which was a poetry workshop with the Navajo poet Lucy Tapahanzo. And she just continues to inspire me as a model for someone for whom poetry and her life aren't separate. Family stories really inform her poetry, and she sort of shifts back and forth between short prose vignettes and poetry in verse, which is something that I do as well. So she was really a model for me early on.
Sorry. Do you feel like that subject matter, you seem to write about family as well, is that something that you feel like is a connection with her for you?
I think she's just someone who maybe gave me permission to do that. That I started to think of all of that material as just this rich mine, you know, that I could work with. And I started to realize that as much as I admired, you know, the Native American oral tradition and literary tradition that I was studying when I was getting my master's, that, you know, that's not the only tradition that has an oral tradition, that, you know, my family has an oral tradition, and especially families in the South, you know, stories are so important.
Yeah, for generations. I mean, you'll have stories that go back, you know, great Uncle Tom, you know, who,
right,
et cetera, et cetera.
Right, and so just listening to my grandmother and her brothers and her sister and, you know, and my mother and his brothers, just all of those, I mean, that's a big, when I was thinking about my inspirations, I've been thinking a lot lately about just the people whose language you absorb when you're a kid, you know, and so just sort of the rhythms of their speech, you know, and the rhythms of those stories are such a big part of my subconscious, I think, and pop out in all sorts of ways in my writing.
Sure. And sometimes little idioms, you know,
Yeah, and yeah. That's something that, you know, it's funny for me because I'm such a, you know, non-Southern Southerner in a way. You know, I lived here in those formative years until I was about 11 years old, and then I left. And that age is kind of the age at which you crystallize, you know? So I was like halfway crystallized as being from North Carolina and, you know, growing up in Tennessee and then not. And so I think about that as well, that those things pop up for me, even though I left, and they're still in my family and they still kind of come up in all sorts of ways in my immediate family that doesn't live in North Carolina. But they're part of, you know, the fabric of my consciousness.
What's it like being back?
It's interesting being back. You know, it's funny how, my impressions of North Carolina were very much kid impressions. And my sense of like what my family's hometown of Salisbury is like was just like the neighborhood where my grandmother lived, where I played in the summer, you know? And so like those summer twilight times of playing, that to me was Salisbury and was North Carolina and was the South. And, you know, and there's a lot more to it than that, obviously. But so it's funny for me to come back now and add adult impressions to my childhood impressions.
Yeah. It's a strange kind of layering, you know?
Yeah.
It definitely is.
Well, read us some more poems. I know you have a small stack here. You want to read us what's next?
So I thought I'd read three prose poems since I tend to, like I said, go back and forth between short prose pieces and, you know, poems in verse. The first two that I'll read incorporate some of these child experiences. And then I have another one that's more like the first three that I read, but it's a prose version.
Right.
Okay. So the first one is called Crocodile Lady and it's kind of self-explanatory. So I'll just read it. Okay. Crocodile Lady. I beg and beg to see the Crocodile Lady at the Knox County Fair. And Mama doesn't want to let me, but Daddy says why not. So it's Daddy who takes me inside, and the tent smells like beer and sawdust, and the few people already in the tent just kind of shrug and walk out. The Crocodile Lady has glasses like my Aunt Betty. She also has on a swimming cap and a bikini, and she is sitting in a nylon and aluminum lawn chair, the kind Granddaddy has hanging in the garage. She sits in the corner reading a Harlequin romance, and then I realize that the sign is just a lie. The Crocodile Lady on the sign, the one with flowing black hair, fancy costume like a Tarzan princess, deep green skin and glinting eyes with diamond-shaped pupils, beautiful and dangerous, admission one ticket, is just a trick. This lady is just a middle-aged woman with a skin disease, and it hurts my feelings. She even sounds like one of my aunts when she says, "Don't cry, sugar, I'm all right."
I like that poem.
Thank you.
I like the dad saying, what's he say?
Oh, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine, whatever. Come on, kid.
Yeah, the daddy says, why not? So a lesson of that is Mama's always right, I guess.
That's a chapbook, I see. When did you publish that?
Yeah, this is that.
That was the 2004, the big contest winner.
The Crocodile Lady. It's all prose poems, and it didn't get a wide circulation, so.
Do chapbooks ever? By their nature, they're often
specialized commodity.
Right. Yeah. People who saw these poems were my mom, my grandmother, my friends, and me. But that's fine.
That's good. Yeah.
I love chapbooks almost for that reason, that they're a step and they mean that you're heading towards a book, but they're humble and they're gifts as much as anything. But it's a nice cover.
Thank you.
Again, we'll have that on the blog. Yeah, we'll get these images up.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
that's probably not true. But
is it still in print?
No,
it isn't. No longer in print.
There were very few copies made.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So I'll jump into this next one. It is another child poem, but it's based on the experiences of my grandmother that she told to me. I told her recently. I went to visit her the other day, and I said, "You know, I have to start recording some of these stories that you tell." And she said, "I don't remember telling stories." She doesn't even realize that she launches into all of these great details from her life that I just keep wanting to write down in my notebooks and, you know, appropriate, make into my own thing. And this one, another quick thing about this one is that the voice of the child in this sounds very much like an adult voice. And I kind of did that on purpose because I was liking to imagine that she talked the same as a kid that she does now. Okay, Pokey Smith. It's funny to think of your own grandmother as a skinny little kid with dirty feet and braids standing under a tree in Spencer, North Carolina, and telling some other little 1930s kids, "You may not know this, but I am part Indian. Indeed, my people come from the coast of Virginia, where there are many blue-eyed Indians." And then later, going to the movies all day by herself for a quarter during the war, and running home late, zigzagging through alleys so that no one could follow her in the dark, her older brothers asleep in ditches in France, her feet smacking the cooling pavement as she mutters to herself, "That's what they want you to think. Well, I think for myself, thank you very much. You can't pull the wool over these eyes. There are all sorts of people in this world, and no two alike. That's a fact." Running, running toward home.
All right.
And we have time for one more.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this one is also a prose poem, and it's not a child poem. It's, again, pretty self-explanatory, so I'll just read it. Even knowing. You would return to it, too, even knowing the metaphor is too blatant, not shareable. You would think about it again if you were once unknowingly watched as you swam in the ocean, and if, as you swam out too far and thought you might surrender to the ocean's huge strength, and also thought for one or two moments that the surrender would be a homecoming, if at this time someone had been standing at the top of the stairs to the beach and had been able to report to you later that something large had leapt very near you when you swam out too far, as you stayed out there treading water, thinking secrets about giving in and being gone, if you had pulled yourself diagonal to the riptide, inching out of your ocean, climbing the stairs to realize that you had been watched all along, had been overpowered all along, had been accompanied all along. You would return to it too after a time, taking it out in private, looking at it from different angles, knowing the richness of the metaphor resided in the different knowledges at play, the scene like the seed of an unfoldment that you are just now feeling but have been feeling all along, a dark jewel singing in your blood, the bass drum and oboe of your life.
Mm. I love that last little bit of line there, the bass drum and oboe of your life.
Thank you. I like it too, and I kept thinking that I stole it from somewhere. I thought certainly I didn't come up with that, so I kept looking through all my poetry books. I found one poem by a contemporary poet named Marie Howe in which she mentions a bass drum sort of beating in the background as she's having a almost a nervous breakdown on a city street, and I think maybe that was in my mind for that reason. But I don't know if you ever do that, where you just come up with something, yeah. You think, how did I get that?
I'm
from
not that,
somewhere?
I'm not that good. I have to. Yeah, no, I think like the father. You know, why not? You know. Well, I noticed just this set of poems that we've been listening to today, and enjoy it very much. That you often speak to that you. I mean, it's nothing new for a poet, that lyrical move to speak to the other, the you, but which is also the self sometimes. Are you aware of it, or say in this poem, do you feel like that's part of how that poem came to be? Hi, Avery. Was it kind of part of the story for you? Who is that you, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It's a you that's the other, and it's also the self, and it has partly to do with, you know, some sense of a split self, but also some sense of wanting to find shared human experience and to address the reader as if, you know, certainly you've felt this too. I'm not the only one. And I think, too, I just became tired of my overuse of the word I in poems. And so yeah. I was experimenting with ways to get away from that. And, you know, and there are other ways to get away from that. You can write in different characters' voices, or you can write
narration.
Right. Et cetera, you know,
yeah. Yeah. But
write a haiku or something.
Right. Right. But yeah, I certainly figures in the lyric tradition in English. Yeah,
right. Which is a tradition that I very much admire and, you know, am writing in to a certain extent. But there's a poet named Amy Gerstler who writes in a lot of different characters' voices.
Yeah.
And that those kinds of poems too can be fun. Just the, you know, the
persona poem helps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this you gets you kind of get both of the best of both worlds. You get a little bit of that directive, that kind of speaking in a voice. It's not you, a heightened voice, but then I always kind of hear that it's also the poet speaking through this voice. Kind of I think of a friend of mine, a poet named Dana Levin, who she calls the eye trapped in its faculty den. there's a need to get away from it at times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This poem also has that nice listing. This is the if, the great poetic hinge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just say if over and over again, and you can go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Nice poem. Even knowing. Yeah. Well, this is Wordplay. I'm Sebastian Matthews, and I'm here with Jeff Davis, my little boy Avery, and our guest today is Joanna Cooper. It's really nice to have you here. I think we have time, if you'd like, to read one more poem.
Yeah.
Okay.
You give us one more.
Yeah.
Sounds good. So I'll read...
Jeff, is that right?
Yeah. We're good.
I'll read one more prose poem, and this one I wrote a while back, I think when I was living in Philadelphia a few years ago. It's untitled. When she was 18, men's gazes would sometimes linger on her for a moment, curious. It was her mother who first noticed it. At times, the daughter's own gaze rested half a step inside herself, her eyes down and to the right like those pre-Raphaelite women. Twice people had commented on this. "You look like one of those pre-Raphaelite paintings," they said. That isn't how she saw herself, though, and she bristled at references to young women blooming. "I'm not a flower," she would say. Mostly she stayed in her room and read books. Boys at the dorm would come by to watch TV and propose massages. She wasn't a Catholic, but she began to think of convents. Silence, the low swoosh of robes, the feeling of beads moving through her fingers, the smooth wood in the chapel, the other women gliding by, their gazes also resting on God within. Mostly she thought of the silence and how she would step into the courtyard alone with the green and the arches, the statues, and the low protecting sky.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, I see that. There's a great line at the beginning there. I mean, it's really nice ones, but...
This is a new piece? Something?
No, this was an older
Piece.
An older piece.
Actually. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I started writing these vignettes, little prose poem things, I think when I lived in Kansas when I was getting my master's, and then wrote them during the time that I was in the doctoral program in Philadelphia at Temple. And it was kind of like my, you know, dirty little secret of, like, I'd go to theory class and talk the way I was supposed to talk about literature, and then I'd go home and, like, write these little vignettes. So came out of that time.
How do you work? Do you work with a... sit down and with a piece of paper and a pen, or do you work at the computer?
I have to compose with the paper and pen, I find. And usually I just kind of, like, once I hit on something, I copy it over and over, and it kind of mutates as I'm writing it.
Right.
And then,
right.
But once it starts to kind of gel or cohere, then I put it in the computer. And of course I make changes as I'm putting it in the computer.
Sure.
Then I print it out and then I make more changes.
Yeah.
But somehow in order to jumpstart my thoughts, I have to start, handwriting.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's always, I think most poets that way. At times, the daughter's own gaze rested half a step inside herself, her eyes down and to the right, like those pre-Raphaelite women. It's a great line.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Well, Joanna, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's nice to have you in town.
Thanks.
And,
it was fun.
And I think that's it for Wordplay. Jeff, take us out.
Indeed it is. Yeah, this has been Wordplay. Wordplay is produced in the studios of WPVM 103.5 LP. A broadcast service of the Mountain Area Information Network. Join us again next Sunday.